The thing that we had to do is, you think of McDonald's, one of the biggest companies in the world, we had to make the problems really small. We had to take something that what seemed so large and make it as small as possible. Because if you don't, you won't get started. You're going to be, oh, this is too overwhelming. I don't know how we're going to do it. Not only did we take it from a culture perspective, let's make it small, let's make it simple. We did that from a technology perspective. And that allowed us to move, allowed us to learn, as you have taught us, run the experiment. And if you get it wrong, I don't like the saying fail fast. I don't like it. I like the idea of learn fast, that you can learn quickly that that's not the right way to go do it, and then you pivot.
Welcome to the Unlearn Podcast, where host Barry O'Reilly seeks to synthesize the superpowers of extraordinary individuals to think big, start small, and learn fast. Here's your host, Barry O'Reilly.
Welcome to the Unlearn Podcast. On this show, I'm delighted to be joined by Daniel Henry, the former global CIO for McDonald's Corporation. Now, previous to joining McDonald's, Daniel had a fascinating career, starting in EDS and moving on to American Airlines, where he spent many years driving technology change and transformation within the airline business. But when McDonald's came calling in 2017, one of the most recognized and valuable brands in the world, operations in 120 countries, it was a fascinating opportunity for him to take on a new challenge. On this show, we dive into his experiences leading major transformations in these massive organizations. How do you create teams? How do you create purpose, but ultimately execute the technology vision to bring it to life and put it in customers' hands? It's a fascinating show for people who are interested in building talent, developing leadership, and taking on hard things to help you grow. So let's hear how it got started for Daniel, and one of the things that's core to his mentality as a technology leader.
The way I've always approached my career from the start has been always work on the most critical things possible that they make or break the company. Not because they're the coolest things to go work on, because they usually are, but typically because you learn a lot about yourself. You learn about how you're going to deal with pressure, how you're going to deal with influence others, how are you going to deal with helping an organization think through things that they haven't thought through before. And early in my career, I was just working on going from one project to the next project to the next project. When I was at EDS, I was asked to help with work on the team to write the proposal for the next generation system for the Texas Medicaid. That was a make it or break it for our account. If we didn't get that deal, we didn't have an account anymore. And I really wanted to work on it. And we were successful. And then I was asked, okay, what's the next thing you want to do now that you helped us win this? I said, well, I want to lead the team that's going to help build a part of this system. And that was a make or break it, because now you are implementing the solutions that you just proposed. And throughout my career, I've just taken that mentality of, if you're not working on mission critical items, one is you're not challenging yourself. You're not helping yourself stand out. You're not helping yourself learn. From that moment, when I was at EDS, I said, I want to work on the most critical systems. When I joined American in April of 2001, it was, okay, how do we create an online experience for the airline? Well, that was a make it or break it, even though we didn't know it at the time, because obviously a few months later, the most tragic thing that could ever happen in the airline industry happened. But we had to rely on technology to help us through that. So that was really sort of verifying that we were working on make it or break it technology. And then you go through bankruptcy and, okay, how does technology play a key role in that? Then you go through a merger, and then how does technology play a key role in that? And just being a part of all of that, where if you don't get it right during bankruptcy, your company doesn't exist. And that's, how do you bring organizations together? How do you bring the right technology to the forefront to help save costs? Then during a merger, and by the way, you're doing a merger with someone that was your fierce competitor. And how do you bring two organizations together? So these are all mission critical items. And then when we were through with that, very successful, I got to a place where I was just going through projects again. I was like, this is not challenging me. I'm not learning. And that's when McDonald's called. And McDonald's said, we need to completely rethink how we do technology at this hamburger company. And this is a make it or break it for our company. This is really going to help us propel, help us. It's going to be a growth driver. And so I've always put myself in a situation where it has to be mission critical, has to be save the company type projects. And that's always been successful for me.
Yeah, no, like I love the mentality in many ways, like just listening to a couple of those nuggets you're sharing, like, you know, for most people to do a merger is a once in a lifetime opportunity for doing a bankruptcy turnaround, right? So it's great you've been through the fire a few times. But talk to us a little bit more about managing high stakes opportunities, right? Because that's something I think is fascinating about what you've been doing. You've sort of done reps of it in a way, right? And you've obviously built resiliency through that. I'm sure none of them have been a cakewalk. So what were some of the things when people are staring at these opportunities? Because I think that can be a blocker for a lot of people, right? When it's high visibility, high stakes, dealing with global brands here, but people face those in their own way and their opportunities. How do you help people take that first step to step forward? What are some of the expectations you would say to them about when they're going to go through this process of dealing with high stakes, but also high reward if it works out? What were some of the things that you started to think about and you've learned from going through those opportunities numerous times?
Well, I would probably repeat a lot of what you've told a lot of folks is, you know, just run the experiment. You go into these things, the more you work on them, the more confidence you have. But there's not a playbook. There's not something where you just, you know, pull out your binder and say, okay, step one's this, step two's this, step three's this, because they're all different. You're dealing with different organizations, you're dealing with different people, you're dealing with different business problems, you're dealing with different technical problems, you're dealing with a different sort of environment altogether. So there's not a playbook. You just got to rely on your experience. But what you taught, you know, and reiterated to us at McDonald's, run the experiment. And it's, you just got to get started. You got to be open-minded that there's going to be more than one way to approach the problem. But I believe there's three things you got to really focus on. One is you got to give them clear purpose. What's the purpose that you're trying to achieve? With a clear purpose, you get the organization comfortable that there's actually some sanity to this. You're just not going to wing it. And with that clear purpose, people have a better understanding how they can contribute. What are the priorities? What's the strategy? The second thing is you got to put the best team you can put together. And that's assembling people that are existing organizations. Sometimes that means you got to go outside the organization. Sometimes you got to go outside the company. You got to create a team that is bought into the purpose. And if they're bought into the purpose, then the third thing just falls in line is you're able to execute. When you have the purpose, the team, and the ability to execute, nothing can stop you.
I've seen you create that for teams, which is fascinating. Bringing your leadership group together, getting everyone aligned, open dialogue. It's fascinating to see that in action. Again, it's interesting that you started in EDS and then went in-house to American Airlines and also in McDonald's, where you were sort of rebuilding these companies. But a key part of both of, especially American Airlines and McDonald's, is working with other players, right? It's not like you just have a technical staff of whatever it is, 10,000 that you need to run these businesses. That was one thing that really stood out to me as I was watching you work, is like the ability to work with the team in-house, people you need to bring in, as well as the suppliers and those helping around you. Talk to us a little bit about like building up that team. What are some of the things you're thinking about? You've got these huge missions, like American Airlines, you're bringing technology to totally revolutionize the customer experience. McDonald's, another fascinating model where you're almost providing technology leadership because the stores are sort of an entity in their own right, which is the franchise model, which, you know, is fantastic, but very interesting and brings nuance to it. So talk to us a little bit about like maybe that first time where you're in AA, you're building up this team like to do a big technology transformation. Like what were some of the things that were running through your mind that, you know, now that you would pass on to others who are facing these types of challenges about taking on big projects, high stakes, getting the right team together to go after these things?
I think you got to look at it a couple of ways. People have told me this many times, and I've heard it repeated many times. Smart people love working with smart people. And My view is if you can just go assemble the smartest people you can, they're going to love working on really hard problems. And that's regardless if they're internal to the company you work for, or they're part of a supplier or partner that you're working with, that if you really expect the smartest people to be on your team and on the teams you do business with, they're going to work great together. The politics get out of the way, and it's the problem that actually brings everyone together. But it starts with, and again, this is going to sound very, you know, a big cliche, there are no badges. It doesn't matter who you work for. You're all trying to solve the same problem. Now, the folks at Hands on Keyboards, they get along very well. It's more of the management that needs to take that same advice, that you're all after the same objective. If we can just almost get out of the way of the very smart people and let them do what they do best, everyone's going to be successful. What I've noticed, especially at McDonald's, that it's very contagious. When you hire a smart person, then the next smart person wants to work there, and the next smart person becomes a very contagious thing. And we had a saying at McDonald's that we wanted to be a great destination for top technology talent. But that was hard for us because we had to go, the story wasn't there. It was, okay, it's McDonald's, an iconic brand, no question about it. And everyone can tell you about their experience at a McDonald's. Oh, I love the fries. I love the hamburger. Oh, my favorite meal is this. But the amount of technology it takes to run a McDonald's, I would say almost compares to how the amount of technology to run an airline. It's amazing. And we wanted to make sure that people understand that you're part of a technology organization that is serving 70 plus million customers a day. And that means that you're going to see your technology being used every day, no matter where you go. So you want to create that momentum that they're doing some really good stuff and it's impacting the business in a very positive way. And the other thing that was very important to me is, yes, you can go buy talent. I can go hire someone that has a 10, 15, 20 year experience. And that's very important. I'm not discounting that. But you also have a responsibility as a leader to grow talent, build talent, because that's the pipeline at the end of the day that is going to help with succession. It's going to help with sort of the next generation of technology because they become experts in the platforms and capabilities that you're using. And so it was important for us, and you know, give credit to Maya at American, and I sort of stole it from her and took it to McDonald's, is how do you get into the universities? How do you make sure that you're bringing in that talent and making sure that you're growing them? And at the same time, they're actually helping you because they're learning the things that you're trying to teach the organization. So when you talk about unlearn, we're trying to unlearn things that actually the students in universities are learning every single day. So they're actually the best experiment. Bring them into the organization. Let them try the things that they've been learning, because sometimes, you know, someone that's been there at a company many years, they're stuck. And so, you know, the unlearning exercise for us is stop doing what you're doing. Start listening to these new folks coming in. They're newbies, but they actually been learning this stuff.
Yeah, I love this. It reminds me of one of the great shows we had was with Joe Narenia. He was the head of commercial banking for HSBC. And he had this sort of method where every year he would invite graduates into the company, right? They'd all join. And he'd give them problems to work on that him and his team were working on just to see how they would go about solving them. He used to say it was one of the most fascinating things. So they'd be pulling up all these different tools, new technologies that were sort of au fait to them, if you will, right? But like within a company, HSBC, big company, bureaucracy, you've got like these people who are sort of little disruptors in a way and showing how you can do things differently. And it also was a great cultural artifact in the company where you had some of the most senior people like Joe sitting down with the most junior people straight out the gate, learning from one another. It's such a great way to think about things. And again, it shapes the culture of what you're trying to create there, growing the future, giving people a shot, everyone having a voice. So the best ideas start to bubble to the top. It's a great way to think about it. Which reminds me then, even like, you know, the time we met, McDonald's is in a really fascinating point, as you described. You'd moved to the new offices inside downtown Chicago, a beautiful building, great, great setup in there. You sort of mentioned this pattern that you learned from another fantastic leader, Maya, at American Airlines, of starting to get out there, like put the brand out there, tell your technology story out there, attract up and coming talent to come work and actually help you move this mountain about what you were trying to do about innovate the whole business. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I think it's another one of these things we always hear, like talent is a challenge in the tech space. How do you go about getting it? You know, some brands can buy it in, some brands have to develop it and build it. You were doing both, as well as, you know, what you were bringing to the show too as well. So tell us some of the lessons about maybe as an industry that we need to sort of unlearn a little bit about how to build these great teams that are going to help you be successful. And again, the interesting dynamic with McDonald's is you've got like 100 countries around the world where you're trying to like do this. It's not just like downtown Chicago. I need to get 5, you know, jQuery engineers. Can someone just mint them for me, please? Like, talk a little bit even about the dynamics of the global aspect of what you were trying to do at McDonald's, especially.
Yeah. So, as I already mentioned, you can be working on the best stuff. And I thought the team, they were doing amazing things. They were bought into the purpose. But the challenge that we had is, McDonald's has brand recognition. There's no question about it. You know, you can drive by the Golden Arches and everyone knows what it is. But for technologists, they didn't know what we were doing behind the scenes. They didn't understand the amount of technology it took to run a restaurant. They didn't understand the amount of technology it took to create a digital platform. They didn't understand the technology it took to, okay, well, now we have digital menu boards that we put around the globe. What do we do with them? And they didn't know that we were actually buying technology companies, bought a company out of Israel, bought a company out of California. We wanted to be fast movers because that gave us even more an advantage. But the challenge we had is no one knew about it. It was the best kept secret. And so what I wanted to do was, I had a job and my team had a job, is we have to get out there and tell the story. We have to tell them the story of the journey we were on. We didn't get everything right. And I actually think that's a benefit, that we didn't get everything right, that we were taking on a responsibility where technology was truly viewed as an asset to the company. Technology was viewed as a growth driver for the company. Technology was used to create operational efficiencies in a restaurant. And when you get that message out, and then you create that opportunity that you're going to see people using your technology every single day. And by the way, it's not just in the US, it's in Australia, it's in Canada, it's in France, it's in Germany, it's in the UK, it's in 110, 120 different countries around the world, creating these global platforms, you create a lot of excitement. And when you do that, again, it starts creating momentum. And then it now becomes, you are a great destination for talent. Talent that you need with a tremendous amount of experience. It's talent that you can get from the universities. It's talent that is actually in a lot of restaurants that it's untapped. And so how do you start bringing them into the technology organization? They're big contributors. How do you continue to work with the business? The business played a huge role in the success of technology. We couldn't have done it without the business at American and at McDonald's. That is something that was a lesson of mine throughout my career, is, oh, we can do this without anyone else. You can't. I promise you, you can't. You think you can, but you can't. You need the business there with you step by step, and we had that. And when we went on that storytelling, it became one of our biggest attractions for talent, which is, I want to go work on that. That sounds really cool. And it's never ending. There is the long list of priorities for both companies to work on is amazing. And the talent that both organizations still have is amazing. And there's no doubt that they'll continue to do great stuff because they got the talent pool to do it.
Yeah, it's kind of funny to listen to you share this, because in a way it sort of goes full circle. Telling the story of working on really hard problems, really high stakes opportunities, you know, like the uniqueness of the projects that you're going to get to work on in these business, I actually find is often a calling card, if you will, for like top talent. You know, I often joke in Nobody Studios where we're building these 100 companies now in 5 years. And I'm always like, you get the call, there's a 1% chance of success, the helicopter's leaving in 1 minute. Like, there's a certain type of person that jumps on that helicopter and goes after the mission, right? And I feel like, you know, as businesses like you did both at American and here at McDonald's, is like telling people like actually the scale of these problems, what's actually so difficult about them, does attract people who want to work on hard things because they know that's where the growth is. They know that's where other smart people are going to go and want to spend their time. And it becomes this sort of lightning rod, if you will, for bringing great people together. But a huge part of that is telling the story. I imagine now, like, half our listeners are probably sitting here going like, wow, I never thought about what it would take to run McDonald's technology infrastructure and you equating it to as complex as an airline to run, right? Like, sometimes people just don't really contemplate what does it take from a technology perspective to get this machine to operate. Raising that awareness is a huge part of it.
It is. When you have 40 plus thousand restaurants around the world, you know, one of the things that I think McDonald's does extremely well, and everyone will tell you the story, is, hey, when I had a hamburger in China, it was the same burger that I had in Dallas, Texas. You know, so the operational focus to make that experience consistent from a food perspective, we got to go figure out how to do that from a technology perspective. Because if you have every restaurant or every country having a different piece of technology, that's impossible to manage. And just imagine, how do you actually secure it? How do you actually put the right governance around it? It's impossible. And so when you tell the story of what you're trying to do and you create a culture where we want to think global, you know, multinational company, we want to think global, but we want to give the ability for each country to be unique because each customer base is different. But how do you run and create global platforms, but it feels local? And that's a challenge. I also would say the thing that we had to do is, you think of McDonald's, you know, one of the biggest companies in the world, we had to make the problems really small. We had to take something that would seem so large and make it as small as possible. Because if you don't, you won't get started. You're going to be, oh, this is too overwhelming. I don't know how we're going to do it. Not only did we take it from a culture perspective, let's make it small. Let's make it simple. We did that from a technology perspective. And that allowed us to move, allowed us to learn, you know, as you have taught us, run the experiment. And if you get it wrong, I don't like the saying fail fast. I don't like it. I like the idea of learn fast, that you can learn quickly that that's not the right way to go do it. And then you pivot. And when we took ourselves to a, you know, from a project-based organization to a product-based organization, it was allowed us to make the problem smaller, make them simpler, and we can move with speed. And that's exactly what we need to do. So it doesn't matter the size of the problem or the company. The problems need to be as small as possible because they get you to move. And that's what we try to do. So it's just as much cultural changes as it was a technology change. And I think they're still successful.
Yeah, no, it is. I ask you to tell a story of that because I think it's one of these things when people think of big global brands, right? They think, how do you roll out the digital experience inside? How do you roll out for the average customer? It's like the digital screens weren't there and then they were suddenly everywhere, right? But I know you didn't go from no stores to like 40,000 stores overnight. So can you share a little bit like about one of those examples? Because I think that's one of the toughest parts for many companies to get their head around is how do they think big, start small, and you say learn fast, like start somewhere and start to scale it up. What were some of the things that you learned to apply that strategy as you were rolling it out?
And some of my, I'll give you a really good story, but some of my examples will seem big, but they were small to us. So when we were buying Dynamic Yield, so we just went through this effort to deploy digital menu boards around the world. So when you go up to a drive-thru at a McDonald's, it's digitized. And that allowed us to really manage content in a better way, manage the experience in a better way. But we also viewed it as a growth opportunity that if we can sort of incentivize you to buy something more, increase the size of the check, well, that's good for business. And you would argue that you're giving the customer what they want, which is things they may not be thinking about on the top of their mind, but we're going to use technology to help them. So we bought this company out of Israel, out of Tel Aviv, Dynamic Yield, and they were really good at using machine learning to say, I'm going to use a lot of data. If you're ordering this combined with this, we see a lot of data that says people like this other thing. You know, if you're buying a Big Mac and you are getting a side salad, when we had salads back in the day, we saw a lot of people actually would take the order of an apple slices. So let's incentivize that. And we can now show that on your menu board. And we did that in a few restaurants as tests. And, you know, it was very data driven. Is this working? Are customers accepting this? And we learned a few things. One is it's actually making the experience faster because they're not just sitting there in front of the menu board going, let me think. I know there's something else. You're actually helping them. So we found, you know, a couple of restaurants, this was a good experience. Well, then to prove it at the next level, I deployed it to all the restaurants in Australia. Again, not big for McDonald's. Someone may say you get deployed to a whole country, but it was a good test bed for us because one is I always view the Australian market. They're always very progressive. They're always willing to try things. They are the classic definition of run the experiment. That's just how they love it. And we used them as that. Hey, let's go try this in Australia because they're willing to do that. And so we tried it in Australia, rolled it out across all the restaurants in Australia. Huge success. We were seeing the uptick in the check and it was successful. So we said, this is what we need to go do for the rest of McDonald's. And that was the strategy of how do you roll out this capability to incentivize people as they're ordering through the drive-through. Next, we took it to the U.S., rolled it all out, and then we went to the other big markets, and it's continued to be deployed. It was using the experiment concept, but we had big test beds, and then we said, you know what, this is working. Let's make the leap. We're going to be fast forwards. We're going to show the industry that this is good, not just McDonald's, but the QSR industry. And we're very proud of how it played out. It really helped the company, and it grew the business, which is exactly what we wanted to do.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Actually, I remember you doing that at the time. It's fascinating, like, to hear this sort of melting pot of a new technology being data driven, better customer experience, operational efficiency. Like, it's like this ultimate trifecta, which is, again, the joy of it's very infrequent. You get to hit all those notes on a technology innovation that you bring to a business, right? So that idea, as you say, of like finding places where you can start to try it locally, pick a region that you're going to roll it out into, scale it up over time. I think it's so important for people to hear those patterns because, as you say, when you're trying to drive these massive programs, they can feel overwhelming. If you're thinking like, how are we going to get this into 40,000 stores in 100 countries on day one? You can freeze. And I see that happen a lot. So it's always great to hear these examples of how people can think big, but start small and learn quickly what's going to work, how they can iterate it a little bit at smaller scale. So when you ramp up, you know, you just have these successful rollouts ultimately, and based on what you've learned along the way, I think it's fascinating.
It helps you become a data-driven exercise versus an emotional exercise. Because as you can imagine, the drive-through experience is very important for McDonald's. There's no question about it. You don't want to do anything that's going to disrupt that negatively or make the cruise experience more difficult. We want to let the facts drive the conversation. And we have a responsibility with the business to say, this was actually going to be a benefit. It's not going to impact the customer. It's not going to impact the crew. It's actually going to make their experience even better. And when you can remove that emotion from those conversations, I just think you get to a better decision quicker.
Yeah, no, right on. Great tips. So now you're in like the next iteration of yourself, which is always fun, right? You're like out there, you know, you're mentoring, you're helping others, you're giving back a lot to community. You've an amazing philanthropic focus for yourself. I always really enjoyed that about your mentality too as well. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you're focusing on now and what are some of the new things that are sort of coming into focus for you?
I think the biggest one is sort of just taking a step back and helping others. You and I have a really close friend, Stephen Leist, and, you know, he's on his next opportunity. How can I help him? I built a pretty good network throughout my career And I had a lot of people helping me. There's no way you can be successful on your own. It's not possible, nor do I recommend even trying. So this is an opportunity for me to help others with advice. You know, when the phone rings, I pick up. You know, I'm still, you know, I'm staying involved in where's AI going for the technology industry. That's exciting and scary at the same time. How do we do that responsibly? You know, so I'm on a AI council just to think through that. And my role on that council is, okay, how do we actually execute it? We can talk all the, you know, strategy, but is it actually something we can implement? So good discussions there. And along the way, if the great next opportunity comes about, I may think about it, but I don't know. It's I sort of like having my own hours right now.
So funny. It's great to see, though, that fires are still burning there in a way, like looking for those high stakes, hard to do problems, right? But I think that's part of the fun of it, right? Is like you say, like you're on your own time now and you can look for those opportunities and explore them. And yeah, I'm sure there's like a bunch of people listening to this show. Your phone's going to start ringing like crazy now in 20 minutes. Go, well, hang on a
don't
second.
Don't call.
Yeah, so really then for yourself, like, you know, it's great. Like, you're obviously exploring these AIs. You're part of some of these groups that are looking at. But what are you most excited about from a technology perspective now looking forward? What are some of the trends that are sort of lighting you up that your curiosity is naturally leaning toward?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's hearing about, you know, AI, generative AI. And I mean, we're seeing all the big technology companies investing tremendously in those capabilities. My big focus and what I think would get a leader like me very excited is it's not about the technology itself. It's about how can you apply that technology or a version of that technology that is going to drive business. I'm not in the business of doing technology for technology's sake. That's not what you do as a CIO or a CTO at a company that's not a technology company. We're there to drive business outcomes. And I think what's exciting for me right now is to help play a role in making sure whatever technology is coming out, you know, we just talked about AI, how can you actually execute that? How can it actually be meaningful within a company? It's great that, you know, it can write your paper for you. How's that going to create business value? I have no doubt, just like in security, the VC world is going crazy and trying to find the next startup that's going to take AI as an example to the next level. And, you know, work with a couple of private equity companies to say, okay, is this making sense? Is this actually a scalable thing? Is this actually, again, an implementable thing? I think that's where I can provide value and coaching and giving some advice is no matter what it is, if it can't scale and it doesn't create business value, then you really got to ask the question, what is it that you're trying to accomplish? And I think where storytelling comes in is how do you tell the story? And great technologists, I believe the best technologist is someone that can talk to multiple levels of an audience. They can talk to developers, they can talk to managers, they can talk to CIOs, they can talk to boards. If you are a technologist that can talk to all those audiences, you're going to be extremely successful. And my goal right now is to help individuals and companies tell a good story.
You've told some stellar stories here today, Daniel. I'm really grateful, obviously, just for you to have you on the show to share some of your journey, the things that you've been on. It's a pleasure watching you work too as well and the time we've spent together. And like, I'm excited to see what you continue to do and help many people. So again, thanks for joining us on the show and sharing your stories.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that show, but I'm even more delighted to share the exciting news. I've recently co-founded a new venture studio named Nobody Studios. Now, venture studio is a vehicle for the rapid creation of new companies, from ideation to acceleration and growth. And our purpose at Nobody Studios will be to de-risk pre-seed stage business ideas. We'll do this by minimizing the time, speed, and capital involved in validating truly repeatable and scalable business models before any significant venture investment. We've an audacious goal to start 100 compelling companies over the next 5 years, and who knows how many beyond that. So if you're interested in radically changing the way work is done, how products are created,
Companies built and funded, even democratizing the wealth creation and how returns are distributed, this could be the business for you. We're looking for talent, capital, and influence. If you wish to contribute any or all of these, just get in touch. You can follow us on nobodystudios.com, on our LinkedIn page, all the social media accounts, or simply my newsletters and what I'm sharing. We'll be launching a truly innovative crowdfunding campaign, and I'd be honored if you'd be willing to join us on this journey and become a nobody yourself.